This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
America's ready for a better story. We are ready for a President Kamala Harris.
That was former U.S. President Barack Obama giving the keynote speech yesterday at the Democratic National Convention. Details coming up. Also, the resurgence and spread of Mpox has health officials worldwide on high alert. And some anti-immigration groups have attacked foreign-owned shops in Johannesburg. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Former President Barack Obama addressed Democrats in his home city of Chicago yesterday, saying Vice President Kamala Harris is the right choice to take on Donald Trump in the U.S. presidential election this November. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from the second night of the Democratic National Convention.
A hometown welcome at the Democratic National Convention for former President Barack Obama.
America's ready for a new chapter. America's ready for a better story. We are ready for a President Kamala Harris.
Obama drew a direct comparison between Harris and her Republican opponent, former President Donald Trump.
Kamala Harris won't be focused on her problems. She'll be focused on yours. As president, she won't just cater to her own supporters and punish those who refuse to kiss the ring or bend the knee. She'll work on behalf of every American. That's who Kamala is.
Obama was introduced by his wife, Michelle, who said Harris's shortened campaign season should encourage Democrats to work even harder to elect her.
We cannot indulge our anxieties about whether this country will elect someone like Kamala instead of doing everything we can to get someone like Kamala elected.
Although Democrats already formalized their nomination process earlier this month, a ceremonial roll call of states.
Great state of Alabama proudly cast 56 votes for the first Black woman president of the United States of America.
Showed the enthusiasm of Democrats for their new nominee.
All 34 of our votes for our next Black woman and first South Asian president.
Harris thanked delegates remotely from her rally in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
So to everyone in Chicago and across America, thank you. Thank you.
Democrats also heard from Harris's husband, who called his wife a joyful warrior. Doug Emhoff is the second gentleman.
She'll lead from the belief that wherever we come from, whatever we look like, we're strongest when we fight for what we believe in, not just against what we fear.
The second night of the convention also featured former members of the Trump administration and Republican officials who have endorsed Harris. John Giles is the Republican mayor of Mesa, Arizona.
Trump made a lot of lofty promises. Unlimited economic growth, American manufacturing reborn, a secure border. Turns out Donald Trump was all talk.
On Wednesday, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz will address delegates here in Chicago, formally accepting the party's nomination as vice president. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
As we just reported, Barack and Michelle Obama excited the convention with their speeches yesterday. VOA's Carol Van Dam is in Chicago covering the convention. She talked to me a little while ago about the goings-on and what to expect tonight at the convention.
Well, the Obamas together are two of the most popular figures in the Democratic Party, and they have been for a long time. And it all began on the Democratic convention floor in 2004 for former President Barack Obama when he just skyrocketed to fame. And at the time before that, hardly anybody knew who he was. But he said that he kind of joked, but it was really a big line of the night when he said that, yeah, this convention has really been pretty friendly to me. You know, they were pretty accepting of guys like me with a funny name. And that was a pointed reference to his African name, Barack Obama, because, of course, his father is Kenyan and his mother is American. So he and his wife, former First Lady Michelle Obama, just were both talking about the sense of hope and excitement and how similar it was for them when he started out back in the early 2000s like that, and just sense of optimism. They also took some time to, you know, say things about Donald Trump, the Republican nominee, President Obama saying, you know, we cannot go back to, we don't want four more years of bluster and chaos. And Michelle Obama, when she was talking about hope, she was saying how, you know, I feel a comeback. And that just brought the house down.
From our vantage point, just watching it, President Barack Obama telling the crowd in Chicago that he was feeling hopeful, and Michelle Obama urging the audience to keep their eyes on the prize. Carol, second question. Second gentleman, Doug Emhoff, Kamala Harris's husband, he also gave a speech.
Right. And, you know, since he is her husband and he's not in politics per se, he didn't really get too political, but he did talk about his family life with Kamala Harris and talked about how his children, his girls, you know, they really had grown to respect and even love Kamala Harris. He said that he knew he had a very solid entity, you know, a solid family going on when his kids started calling Kamala Mamala. And he also just talked about how she's a strong woman and she cares about people and the empathy that she has for others. And that's a theme that carried through as well with the Obamas. And something that Michelle Obama did too is she fought back against some of the Republicans who have said she's not qualified or she's incompetent. She said that Kamala Harris is one of the most qualified people to ever run for the office of the White House in this country.
Okay, the second gentleman actually showing America a personal side of his wife. So, Carol, what's expected for the rest of the week as far as protests are concerned?
Well, the pro-Palestinian protesters that have been out here in force have been, I would say, in the thousands at most. They are not the tens of thousands that organizers had first said there would be out here, but they are quite a few, and they are very forceful in their messaging about ending the war and some of the placards saying stop aid to Israel. They want the U.S. to stop arming Israel in its fight with the Hamas in Gaza. But, you know, it's not just them. There's also people out here that are protesting about women's reproductive rights. You know, the abortion is a big issue because of the landmark Supreme Court decision, Roe v. Wade, being overturned. And then later this week, today is supposed to be fairly quiet, you know, as far as the protests are concerned. But tomorrow, Thursday, is supposed to be the big night when they're going to make a big push on the final night of the convention when Kamala Harris gets up on stage and formally accepts the nomination.
VOA's Carol Van Dam reporting from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. At the Democratic National Convention, speakers this week included a Democrat who lost to former President Donald Trump and one who beat him. Former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton delivered a speech Monday highlighting the potential for Harris to break the glass ceiling and become the first female president. President Joe Biden began his long political farewell during the first night of the Democratic National Convention, signaling a transition of leadership to Vice President Kamala Harris. Mark Katz, professor of government and politics at George Mason University, discussed the significance of the two speeches with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Well, I think the main significance is that you know, he's acknowledging and endorsing Harris's candidacy. You know, he's taking it in good stead. He's showing that he supports her. And so if there was any you know, lingering ill will about his not being the presidential candidate. I think he's trying to show to his, you know, his mainly, you know, older supporters in particular that he accepts this and he wants them to as well.
President Biden directly addressed the Gaza conflict, acknowledging the concerns of protesters outside the convention and emphasizing his efforts to end the war and bring peace. That despite the issue receiving little attention inside the convention hall. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I really just think that the Democrats don't want the Israeli-Hamas conflict to be an issue dividing them. It does divide them, but they, you know, I think the most important thing is defeating Trump. And so, you know, I think, you know, even those who support the Palestinians, who are critical of Israel, they will understand that if Trump is elected, it will not be better for the Palestinians by any means. And so I think that Biden really needs to see progress on conflict resolution. The Democrats would like to do that to show that this isn't going to be an ongoing divisive issue. I mean, it will be, but it's for their own domestic ends that they really need to see some progress in bringing about conflict resolution in Gaza.
Former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton delivered a speech highlighting the potential for Harris to break the glass ceiling and become the first female president, evoking her own 2016 campaign and expressing support for Harris. Is America ready for a first female president?
Well, I think Democrats certainly are, and I think that a lot of independents are too. And whether Republicans are is not quite as clear. I think that I think it's less an issue for them that she's a woman than she's a minority. But I think, you know, I think that we will see. I mean, after all, Hillary Clinton did win the popular vote in 2016. So that shows that a majority of the voters then were ready for a female president. And I don't think there's been any, you know, reversal in this. So I would say on balance, I think America is ready for a first female president.
But she criticized former President Donald Trump as a Republican candidate very harshly. Was that effective in the convention?
Well, I think that's exactly what everyone there wanted to hear. I think it would have been very strange if she had not criticized him harshly. You know, I think that, you know, the idea that the Democrats are trying to convey is, even if you don't think the Harris candidacy is perfect, it's going to be a lot better than Trump. And then keep your eye on that, because, you know, whatever your objections to Harris, the alternative is Trump. And do you want that? So I think that's why she did this.
That was Mark Katz, professor of government and politics at George Mason University near Washington, D.C. He spoke by phone with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shanawi. You can keep up with all the U.S. election news on voaafrica.com, voanews.com, and wherever you listen to or watch VOA news programs. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Yeheyes Wuhib, in Washington. The resurgence and spread of mpox has health officials worldwide on high alert. At least 13 countries in Africa have reported cases of the disease. The World Health Organization has declared the outbreak of a new variant of the virus to be a public health emergency of international concern, and the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has declared it public health emergency. My colleague, Leonard Mudu, spoke with Dr. Matshidose Moeti, the World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, about the outbreak.
You know, I think the declaration of mpox as a public health emergency of international concern by the World Health Organization and also of continental concern by the African Centers for Disease Control of the African Union underscores the seriousness of the outbreak and, more importantly, the risk for international spread both within Africa and beyond Africa. We've now being told that there is a case in Sweden and also a case in Pakistan. So it just underlines then the importance of working together across countries and across continents to make sure that we contain the spread of this virus. If just coming back to Africa, you know, this disease has been endemic in some areas, but we're starting to see in Eastern Africa, particularly around Kivu, spread to new countries, neighboring countries like Burundi, Rwanda, Uganda, and there was one case in Kenya. That underlines the to new countries, even in Africa. And under these circumstances, we may find in very faraway places, healthcare workers and healthcare systems that are not expecting Mpox may be unaware what this is and therefore enable and allow the spread to go further. We may also find populations that have been exposed before that don't have any level of immunity to this virus and get seriously ill. I think all of this underlines the fact that not only in a region of Africa where we have the epicenter in the eastern part of Democratic Republic of Congo, but globally, we need to be working together to raise awareness, to mobilize the resources, to increase the preparedness of people, health systems, and countries to recognize that Mpox has arrived. Mm-hmm. The virus is sometimes changing so that it's affecting different population subgroups, so that we work globally together to contain this virus.
And Dr. Moeti, speaking of resources, vaccine availability has been a challenge. A country like Nigeria has been dealing with Mpox for a few years now with no access to vaccine. Who is supposed to be vaccinated at this point, and what is being done to ensure equitable access?
I mean, clearly the most at-risk people, starting, I would say, with the healthcare workers who might get into the first contact with somebody who presents at a clinic or a hospital and they have to nurse them, are really the most important people to vaccinate. So frontline health workers, frontline responders need to be protected so that the health systems then don't collapse under the weight of this virus as it spread. And then secondly, of course, people who are closely in contact with cases within families and household members, intimate partners, should also be vaccinated. There are some people who have health conditions that make their immune system compromised. People living with HIV, for example, particularly those not on treatment, may also be more susceptible to severe illness if they get Mpox. So the issue of access to vaccines is something on which we are working collectively at the international level, WHO, the Africa CDC, other partners. And this really is a case of negotiating with the pharmaceutical companies that are able to produce this vaccine to ensure that they scale up their production and increase the availability of vaccines.
That was Dr. Matshidiso Moeti, the World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo. She spoke with Lenord Moudou, host of VOA's Health Chat radio program and Health Living. Also, Ivory Coast health authorities just yesterday reported 28 cases of Mpox, with one person dying from the virus. Mpox has killed hundreds in the Democratic Republic of Congo. We'll have more reporting on the Mpox outbreak and other health issues on voaafrica.com. Foreign residents are fleeing several townships in Johannesburg, South Africa's largest city, as community organizations force them to close their businesses. The latest xenophobic violence was sparked by the shooting of a young man in Soweto this month, allegedly by a Pakistani shop worker. Darren Taylor reports.
Over the past 15 years, many migrants from South Asia, including Bangladeshis, Indians and Pakistanis, have established stores in South African townships. In some areas, these migrants now dominate small-scale trade, to the frustration of organizations that accuse the foreigners of stealing jobs from locals and sometimes of racism. The South Asian business people run what are known locally as spaza shops, selling a variety of low-cost goods, including bread, cool drinks, and tinned food. Zandile Dabula leads Operation Dudula, one of the organizations pushing foreigners to close their shops in Soweto and other townships. She says local police are protecting violent foreigners, as she puts it, instead of their own people.
People do not long feel safe around our law enforcement agencies. And we, as Operation Dudula, still feel that they're not doing enough for the communities. We shouldn't even be having guns in those casa shops. If police were doing their job, then a lot of incidents would have been avoided. We are harboring illegal immigrants. They do not like us. They do not love us. And they can go to such an extent of shooting at us. These people need to go out of our township. And township economy belongs to South Africans.
Yet many communities welcome the foreign spaza shop owners, saying the migrants provide a valuable service. South Africa's Department of Home Affairs also says most of the South Asians have legal documents to run businesses and have valid work permits. Recently, several groups attacked and looted stores managed by documented migrants, ordering them to leave townships. Dabula denies her organization was responsible for the violence.
We avoid chaos. We always make sure that when you do operations, it's always in order. There is no looting. There is no violence. We are not taking law into our own hands. Community have always asked us to come and assist. Their trust is on Operation Dudula. We have been entrusted with fighting the illegality, especially on the immigration side.
Operation Dudula members have in the past been arrested for various crimes, including damage to private property. Police are again warning them not to resort to vigilantism. Some groups say they'll allow migrants to reopen their businesses, but only if they agree to give a third of their profits to locals. Dabula denies Operation Dudula is part of such extortion. Stephen Gordon of South Africa's Human Science Research Council says most of the country's estimated 4 million foreign migrants contribute positively to society.
If immigrants come to South Africa and engage in economic activity, they add to the economy. This generates jobs for ordinary people, both in terms of foreigners employing South Africans, but also in terms of downstream effects. Foreigners buying things within the country creates larger amounts of economic activity, which leads to economic growth, which leads to more jobs, and also a healthier fiscus as people engage in various forms of tax payments, including, of course, VAT.
On Monday, security forces maintained a heavy presence in several Johannesburg townships as concern grows about the anti-foreigner violence spreading across South Africa. The country has experienced waves of anti-foreigner violence over the past several years. As unemployment stays above 30% and the government struggles to provide water, electricity and other services to many communities. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And five Kenyan police officers appeared in court today, suspected of helping a man accused of murdering and dismembering dozens of women escape jail. News reports say the police launched a manhunt yesterday after alleged serial killer Collins Jumasi and 12 Eritreans broke out of a national police station. Jumasi was arrested last month after the discovery of a number of mutilated bodies in a rubbish dump in a slum area of the Kenyan capital. He and other detainees appeared to have escaped by cutting through a wire mesh roof at the station. The five officers appeared in a Nairobi court with police seeking an order to detain them for 14 days to complete their investigations. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.